Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight?
Good.
You ready to roll out?
As in that ludicrous song from like 2001?
In any other week, that would be a reference to that ludicrous song from 2001. But this week, it's a Transformers reference, because as people who follow my work on Comics Alliance know, I am into the Transformers now, I guess. So we have a very special guest here to talk about that, as well as his own stuff. David Willis is here to talk about his comic, Dumbing of Age, and also talk about why he decided it was a good idea to start the Transformers Wiki. So that should be a fun conversation to have later on in the show.
It should. But before we get to that conversation, Chris, we've got some business to take care of. First of all, we're going to thank our newest Patreon patrons.
That's right, Matt. These are people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks in the mail called bills. Still makes me laugh.
That's a new regular. That's as regular now as hello everybody and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. Those gimmicks right. In the mail called bills.
Right, because something that I have said on 253 episodes of the show is just like something I have said twice.
Yeah,
but no. These are people who have decided to support the show monetarily, and we definitely appreciate that. If you enjoy the show. And you feel like giving back a little bit with maybe even a dollar a month, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and we will thank you on air, just like these folks.
Yes, we will. And we've got a few names. The first one is just Christian.
Oh, well, thank you, Christian. Is it Christian?
It could be.
Is it the former Intercontinental Champion?
Christian, you're finally on your own.
All he needs is just one more month. Patreon donations.
Peter Donaitch is the next name Peter. I've got.
Thank you, Peter. We appreciate your support.
Charlie Smith.
Oh, thank you, Charlie.
And that's all we've got this time. If you would like to donate, as Chris said, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us out there.
That's right, Chris. And you can get access to bonus content and other nice new stuff that we have going out to all of our patrons.
That's right. Now, Chris, it's time for us to do some checks and wrecks, so let's do that. So come on, before you wreck yourself. All right, Chris, what's been going on with you this week?
Man, nothing. Nothing's been going on, Matt. I mean, I'm not like setting up a bit or anything. I have not done anything. The only thing I did this week was I went to traffic court.
How did that turn out for you?
It was fine. I was driving with expired tags because I always forget to renew my tags. Like, they don't send you... Like, I'm very good about paying my bills. Like, my bills arrive in the mail, I pay them. But they don't send you, like, a bill for your license plate. So I constantly forget it, and I just forget that it exists until I get pulled over. And this has happened to me, like, 3 times in my life. But it's usually just a thing where... I get my tag sorted out. I pay the fine and I'm okay. I am no longer in violation of the laws of the state of South Carolina, which is nice.
I think other states do let you know, hey, your tags are about to expire. You've got to renew them. South Carolina is just real cavalier about it.
I do not think they do, or maybe they do, and I just.
I have definitely gotten reminders in like Illinois, like, hey, your tag's gonna expire. You gotta come.
Illinois is gonna be all over that, man. They need that civic money.
They do. They're desperate.
So I'm currently wearing a shirt with a collar. for the first time in a couple weeks since the last time you saw me.
It was a special occasion. You got especially dressed up to record this podcast.
Well, I'm also wearing like sweat shorts, so I just did not change my shirt when I got home.
I got you.
It's a polo. It's an Old Navy polo. It's very comfortable. But yeah, that is the only thing I have done this week. It has just been a quiet week of working and getting excited about Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes. Holy moly. Am I into it? Well, while we're talking about apparel, Chris, I have to talk about my week of trying to buy a pair of pants.
Okay, I would not think that would be a task that would take you a week.
You'd think wrong. Because here's the deal. For reasons that I don't really want to get into, because it's kind of a bummer, I want to make sure that I have a pair of black suit pants to go with my black suit jacket. The pair of suit pants that came with that suit jacket do not fit me at all anymore. I have gained a few inches in the waistline over the past couple years, and I cannot put those pants on anymore. So I decided this week, I believe it was Tuesday, that when I had a little break from work, this is one thing you can do when you work from home. At about like 2 o'clock, when you've got a lot of your work done and there aren't any major tasks to do until 5 or 4:30 or whatever, you can be like, okay, I'm going to go try to do this and I'll be back in time to do the thing I got to do. I jumped in my car and I drove to the brand new outlet mall that has just opened on I-26 here in Asheville. That was mistake number one, going to an outlet mall that opened Saturday and being like, I can get over there and it's a weekday and everything will be fine. It wasn't that bad there. It was somewhat crowded. It was crowded enough that it like took me more time than I wanted to take. And I hit all these different stores looking for a pair of suit pants, like trying to find the suit pants that I wanted. They were all a little more expensive than I wanted to, like, than I wanted to pay. And I kept having this like thought in my head of like, what if they don't match the jacket? I don't know what I'm going to do if they don't match the jacket. I'll have to bring them back and that's going to be annoying. I went into this like crazy Dillard's like clearance sales store that used to be like a mall Dillard's, because this outlet mall used to be a regular mall. And there's signs everywhere in this store that say all sales final, no returns. And I found this one pair of suit pants that I was like, these will fit and they look okay. But I was just like super hesitant to buy them. They had elastic in the waistband. But I was super hesitant to buy them because I was like, what if they don't match the suit jacket? So I ended up just leaving there with nothing and being like, all right, here's what I'll do instead. I have some Amazon credit. I'm going to go to Amazon. I'm going to get a pair of suit pants from the company that made my suit jacket. That way I'm pretty sure it'll match and everything will be fine. So I buy those pants on Amazon. They arrived today. This is Thursday when we're recording this. I tried them on with the suit jacket. They were not the same black. They were not the same shade as the jacket at all. It looked awful. So I had to throw those pants back in a bag, put a shipping label on them, take them to the UPS store, and ship them back to Amazon. When I did that, I got the bright idea that I would just find a tailoring and alteration store, a place in town, and just have them let out my old pants, because I know those match the jacket. So I found this one tailor. I called him up and I was like, hey, how much is it to let out a pair of pants? And the guy on the phone was like, oh, $10. And I was like, you are lying to me. But fine, I'll bring the pants by and you can look at them and let them out. I get there, I give him the pair of pants, he has me put them on so he can see how much to let them out. And this tailor guy, to his credit, is like, there you go, all right, $10. I pull out my wallet and I'm like, do you take a debit card or a credit card? And he goes, no, 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 just cash your check. I had no cash in my wallet. Marlene had my debit card. So I was like, let me just go get the cash. I'll be right back. There's a grocery store right next to there. I run over to the grocery store. I buy something like some food that I can eat later. And I realize I do not have my debit card. I cannot actually get cash back because I can't get cash back with a credit card. So here I am standing by the highway. I do not have the cash I need to pay this tailor. He has my suit pants. I don't know when I'm ever going to have some pants to match this suit. What am I going to do? I eventually ended up just going back into the tailor shop and being like, look, I can't get the cash right now. Can I come back and pay you the money tomorrow? And he kind of looks at me like, what kind of delinquent person does not have $10 and can't get $10? But fine, come back tomorrow. He handed me the ticket. And that is where they are now. I still have to go pay him $10.
This is a very complicated story.
Yeah, it is a very complicated story about trying to find one fucking pair of pants.
Now, Matt, here is my question, and I know the answer to this. I know that the answer is because it's summer and you're in a Carolina. Why didn't you just take the jacket with you when you were looking for pants so that you could see if they matched?
It's a good question. Like, you mean wear it? Like, just bring it with me in the car?
Just bring it with you.
It literally did not occur to me until I got to the outlet mall that's what I should have done. Because I was in such a hurry. Like, because, you know, I was, like, in the middle of work. And I was like, okay, I got a minute to get out the door. But I got to get out the door right now. So I just, like, got out of here as quickly as I could and hoofed it over to that outlet mall. And then I get over there and I'd be like, man, it'd be a lot better if I had the jacket with me.
Well, let this be a lesson to everyone else out there. Take the jacket with you.
And good Lord, if you're going to a tailor who might only take cash, make sure your debit card is in your wallet before you go. Because he ain't going to take a credit card. All right. That is my crazy story of the week.
I can't believe I had to go to court was a more boring story than I tried to buy pants.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Chris, what's your rec?
My recommendation this week is yet another entry in the Chris Likes Retro Gaming series that we have been on, which is a magazine that is all about the world of retro gaming. It is called Retro, and you can find it at readretro.com. I was actually a Kickstarter backer for its second year. I believe the magazine is bi-monthly, so I'm getting 6 issues. A long time ago, years ago at this point, I recommended a pro wrestling fanzine that I'm still a very big fan of, Robert Newsom's Atomic Elbow. And you and I had a conversation about how interesting it is that there are, you know, there's still stuff like fanzines where normally this is content that you would see on a blog. Normally this is content that you would see on a website. And I feel like Retro is very much the same way because it is a magazine that is all about games that are at least 15 years old. The current issue, the one that just came out that I've been reading, is fighting game themed. And it's all about Mortal Kombat specifically and sort of the rise of Mortal Kombat, loosely tying it into the release of the new Mortal Kombat game, which is what, Mortal Kombat X or possibly 10?
I think it's actually both. I think it's X and 10. You could say it either way.
Mortal Kombat X10? Mortal Kombat F-150? But there's a lot of interesting things in there. To go even beyond Mortal Kombat, because again, I am a Street Fighter partisan in that battle. I think Mortal Kombat is actually pretty rough. But there's a lot of really cool stuff in the magazine. And they have done, not only like, they will actually write full reviews of 20-year-old video games as though they came out this week, which I think is interesting. But they'll also review, like, a lot of retro-inspired stuff that you see, like stuff that you can get on the virtual console or on Xbox Live Arcade or on the PlayStation Network store. There's a lot of fun writing in there. I've talked before about how much I enjoy Jeremy Parrish, who's on the Retronauts podcast and does the Anatomy of Games series. He's got some stuff in there. The first issue of this year was all about adventure games, which was a genre that I like Monkey Island, and that is as far as I ever got into adventure games. Even the Strong Bad ones that Telltale made way back at the... I think that was kind of the beginning of Telltale. I had a hard time really getting into them, because point-and-click adventure games just weren't... They're just not for me. But I like reading about things. I like reading about how things came about and how things were put together. So if that sounds like something you would be interested in, you can check out Retro at readretro.com. The issues, if you are not a subscriber, you can get a digital download of each issue for $3, which is not too shabby. And it is, I gotta say, it is a slick magazine. It is a good-looking package that has a lot of really cool content in it. And is definitely worth a read.
That sounds cool. I would actually like to pick that up, too.
Yeah, here's an interesting thing that I learned in this week's issue. Did you know that there was a Joust-themed two-player pinball machine?
Like Joust the arcade game?
Yeah, like Joust the arcade game with the knights on ostriches. They tried to make a competitive pinball table. And so instead of being like, you know, the regular kind of slanted pinball table that you think of, it was completely flat. It was like a you see the cocktail table games? It was like that. And then you would have flippers on each end of the table. Huh. And it sounds like such a great concept. And they mentioned in the article that it was, like, there were only, like, 300 ever made. Because it did not work. But that now, like, looking back on it, people were like, oh, this was, like, a really cool, innovative thing.
Yeah, if the ball gets stuck in the middle of the table, what do you do?
I guess you just hit the table.
You just pick it up. Pick it up on one side.
You tilt it.
Yeah.
Definitely check it out, Matt. I think you would find a lot in there to enjoy.
I bet I would.
Matt.
My recommendation is something that you can now find on Hulu, because a ton of Cartoon Network stuff just went up on Hulu. You'll know from listening to this show in recent years that I do not actually have, like, full cable, and have not in quite a long time. So I've missed a lot of Cartoon Network stuff in the past 3 or 4 years. A lot of, like, regular Cartoon Network stuff and a lot of Adult Swim stuff. Like, I didn't get to watch regular show, really, until it popped up on Netflix. And I've been mainlining the seasons of regular show that have not been on Netflix that are now on Hulu. Like, I'm really excited about watching Steven Universe now, because it's on there. But there's an Adult Swim show that just came on there that I had not watched, that I'd heard a lot of great stuff about, and that I finally got to watch. I've watched the first few episodes of it, and I think it's really fun, and that is Rick and Morty. If you are like me and you missed it on Adult Swim because you don't have cable or for some other reason, and you have Hulu and you can watch it, definitely go watch Rick and Morty. It is a really fun, very high energy, crazy, funny show, sort of in the vein, like the Adult Swim vein of Venture Brothers. Not that it's similar in terms of genre or even necessarily humor, but in that it's not just like full-on non-sequitur humor, which is what a lot of Adult Swim stuff is. It's fully animated and has a through-line story that goes through the whole season. And includes like some adventure with its humor. Basically, the concept, if you're not familiar with Rick and Morty, which I don't know why I'm describing it. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are. But basically, this kid, Morty, who is maybe not the smartest kid, has a mad scientist grandfather named Rick, who lives with his family and is constantly dragging him on these weird universe-spanning, time-jumping, interplanetary adventures that end up going super crazy and that involve him having to, like, smuggle space fruits in his butt. Stuff like that. It sounds like super crude and gross, and in places it definitely is. But besides that, I think there's some really funny character stuff in it, and it's just generally pretty good. Like, I didn't really totally know what to make of Rick and Morty when I first saw it or heard about it. I knew Dan Harmon was involved in it, and I tend to like the stuff that Dan Harmon does, but I didn't know for sure. But then I started watching it on Hulu. I had some friends in town this past weekend, and I was about to flip over to watch the Eric Andre show on Hulu. And they were like, no, stop and watch Rick and Morty. So I did, and I'm glad they told me that, because I liked it. Chris, have you watched that show?
I have not, but it has been recommended to me several times, and now that it's on Hulu, I'm probably going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I've been like trying to set aside so much time to watch Cartoon Network stuff on Hulu, because it is all on there now. So much of it is on there now.
Yeah, like, between the WWE Network and Cartoon Network stuff ending up on Hulu, there is now no reason for me to have cable.
Yeah.
Because those were the two things I wanted.
Yeah. You just don't get to watch Raw live. That's the one thing.
Now, Matt, have you not watched Steven Universe?
I've not seen any of it.
Oh, Matt, you are in for a treat.
Yeah, I'm super psyched about watching it on Hulu. So, because I can't go on Tumblr without every third post being about Steven Universe.
That's because it's very, very good.
Yeah, I'm pumped about watching it.
And Tom Sharpling's on it.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm very psyched to watch Steven Universe and a bunch of the other stuff that's on there. A ton of the Adult Swim stuff that I missed. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week. Okay, we are making this a tradition these 2 months of talking about Convergence when it comes out. Let's start by talking about the good of this week in Convergence. That question, two-parter, finished up beautifully.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so good.
And one of the nice things about just that it exists is that I have a big interview with Greg Rucka about Renee, about the question, the idea of making Renee the new question, and then coming back to it for Convergence. That's going to be going up at Comics Alliance this week. But yeah, like this issue, it's so nice that Renee got a happy ending.
it super is. And look, for, again, reasons that I won't dig super deep into, this issue kind of hit really close to home for me in some ways. But that aside, I loved Renee getting that happy ending. I loved her, like, crazy self-sacrifice. I loved how this second issue became a team-up. Like, in two issues, we went from single character focus on the question to very organically moving her into a team-up with Batwoman and the Huntress.
Yes.
And, like, doing all this, like, really intricate, like, character love triangle stuff between the three of them in a way that is not confusing.
Yeah, the love triangle stuff was really fun, and it was handled really well. But the real, like, standout point of this issue, aside from the ending, there's a scene where two Harvey Dents are arguing the morality, like, not the morality, the legality of one of them killing the other.
Yes.
Which is hilarious. And like, they are having a full-on legal debate about it.
And the art in that sequence is amazing. Cully Hamner does the art, as he did on the question backups that were in Detective Comics.
Yes.
And the art in that sequence frames, like, there's one Harvey Dent who is not Two-Face, who is still Harvey Dent. And then there's another Harvey Dent that is Two-Face, but he's framed in several of those shots as you only see the Harvey Dent side of his face. And it's really clever. like it adds a whole other layer to their debate where they're equals. You know, one of them is not the ruined Harvey Dent in that moment.
Yes. Along the same lines of talking about how great Cully Hamner is in this issue, I'm going to say that there's an action scene in this issue that is probably the best use of a fedora in the 21st century.
Agreed. So we loved that one. We also thought the Atom number two, the wrap-up of that Atom two-parter.
Yeah, I wrote this is another one that I wrote a review of for Comics Alliance because it's literally the weirdest the weirdest DC superhero comic of the year.
Yeah,
and also one of the best. Oh my god!
Since there's a review of it on Comics Alliance, we won't dig too deep into it. But
that review has spoilers.
It is weird and crazy and great, and you should read it. Now, I didn't read a ton of the other series yet. I want to dig into the Speed Force one though.
Because I like the Speed Force one a lot.
That's Wally West and Tom Grummett is drawing the thing, and I really want to read that. But we got to talk about the Convergence regular series, the main series. And every time we talk about it, one of us says, "I think I figured it out." Chris, I think I figured it out.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad somebody did.
This isn't the main Convergence series. There isn't a main Convergence series. This is a tie-in to the non-existent main Convergence series. Because it's about this set of characters. Like, this issue's all about Earth 2 Dick Grayson, basically, or at least it starts that way. And then it all becomes about Warlord. And then it becomes about, like, the character of Telos and where he comes from and what his deal is. And he's basically got, like, a Silver Surfer thing going on with Brainiac. But it feels like this weird side story to the big stuff that should be going on in a main story somewhere, but isn't. It's like Convergence Frontline.
The absence of our... like the new 52 DC universe is so conspicuous that it's going to be like it has to be the thing that happens in Convergence number 8 or whatever the last issue is, because the fact that we're not seeing that universe, those characters, like our, you know, in theory at least, I mean, look, in practice, like my DC universe are the pre-Flashpoint characters, right? Like, those are the ones I kind of had the most affection for.
Right.
But that we're not seeing the current DC universe in this means that they have to show up eventually, right?
I don't know.
They have to.
I don't know if they're going to. Like, but here's what's even crazier to me about the main Convergence series is that it follows these characters but doesn't even give us, like, the pre-Flashpoint characters. Or the Golden Age characters, or the Silver Age characters, like the pre-crisis characters, or the immediate post-crisis characters. They're all off in these other two-part side series. This is strictly the Earth 2 book.
The main thing that happens in this issue is that Dick Grayson decides to become the Earth 2 Batman.
It's one of the main things.
I mean, I guess for obvious reasons, that's the thing that I thought was the main thing. Like, yeah. I have no connection to Warlord maybe dying.
Or Deimos deciding to take over for Brainiac.
Yeah, and I was convinced that when he's like, Telos, I know who you really are, that Telos was going to be someone. Like, Telos was going to be Lex Luthor.
No, he's some guy.
Yeah, he's a guy named Telos, who is from a previous reality. All of this stuff is stuff that should be happening in Convergence Earth 2, feel like.
Also,
like, this is the Earth 2 versus Skartaris book. And the fact that we've got all the miniseries are two issues, right?
Right.
Like, Convergence Atom, Convergence Question, all the tie-in issues are two. This has been going on for six. It's five and a zero issue.
Right.
Of Earth 2 versus Skartaris. with some other guest appearances. And I don't know why the focus is on that. You know, and not even, you know, completely apart from whether the book is good or bad. Like, I don't know how the decision was made where the focus of Convergence, the, you know, the book called Convergence that's coming out weekly and kind of shepherding the event, is Earth 2 versus Skartaris.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that is finally ending in this issue when Deimos, like, pops up and says, like, hey, I took over for Brainiac. And then we see, like, Emerald Twilight Hal Jordan, pre-Crisis Supergirl and the Flash, and post-Zero Hours Superman, Lois Lane, and their kid.
Yeah.
All on, like, a big two-page spread. Like, maybe that means finally we'll see some of these cities fight each other. But Deimos is kind of changing the game here, where he's like, hey, I'll protect your cities, but you gotta, but for a price.
Yeah, and this is, you know, this is the second half of Convergence, right? Like, it's only running for 8 weekly issues, I think. Right.
Yeah, it's gonna be 8. Well, so 9 is, if, 9 if you count Zero as one of them.
That Zero issue. So this is the turning point, right? This is where we're supposed to get the twist that leads into the second act, which is Deimos. I don't even know what really changed. Like, halfway through the thing, someone shows up and goes, hey, you don't need to fight each other anymore. I'm like, wait, but we still have we still have 3 more weeks of these books coming out,
yeah,
where they're fighting each other.
And nobody fought each other. Where was the where was the fighting each other?
I mean, the fighting each other has happened in the books. It's just that it's, you know, the books that we care about, you know, the Ray Palmer beats that dude from the Extremists on, like, page 5.
Yeah.
And the Harvey Dent versus Harvey Dent fight is not the centerpiece of the question. It's a good little piece of it. But yeah, like, I feel like the book called Convergence should be Superman versus Superman versus Superman versus Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Convergence should be the Royal Rumble of this crossover.
Yeah, it's the same thing that bugged me about hearing about the Clone Wars in Star Wars, and then seeing what the Clone Wars actually were. Because in my head, the Clone Wars were like Obi-Wan Kenobi fighting 3 other Obi-Wan Kenobis, right?
Oh, yeah. Did I ever tell you, like, one of the reasons that I became disenchanted with Star Wars? Because I was convinced of something that was completely in my head.
What was that?
I used to have, like, a Boba Fett trading card. And, you know, this was, you know, pre-prequels and mostly pre-Expanded Universe. So, you know, we didn't know anything about Boba Fett. And it was like, yeah, he first appeared during the Clone Wars, and he has a mysterious vendetta against Han Solo. And I was like, oh, Boba Fett's a clone of Han Solo.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that in my heart. Like, it was just a fact I accepted that I made up. And, yeah, it turned out that was not the case. It turned out Boba Fett was actually just a sad child.
Yeah, a sad child who wanted his dad to blow up stuff that made guitar sounds. Okay. That's got to be it for our Convergence Roundup. For a brief comparison, now I don't want to get into too much review of it because you are writing a Secret Wars tie-in.
Yes.
X-Men 92. On sale, yes, later this month on Comixology. But for a little bit of comparison between Convergence and Secret Wars, I'll just say, myself, Convergence is a book that is frustrating for being too focused on a very specific group of characters and not really branching out into the broader story in the way that we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say if there's a major flaw in Secret Wars, #1, which came out this week, it's that it's too big, broad, and ambitious. That we have see too much of, like, the big stuff without focusing in on the narrow stuff, which arguably is a criticism of Hickman's entire body of work in comics, at least superhero comics, is that it's kind of too big. and not necessarily character focused enough. But certainly Secret Wars number one has all the stuff that is promised. There are two universes that are fighting each other to the death. It is this huge continuation of what has been going on in the Avengers books. There is a eulogy page at the end of it for universes. We see a Hulk going through the Triskelion. Like, big stuff happens in that comic. It is undeniable that big stuff is happening. And, you know, though I think there is some valid criticism in that, like, it's too big and doesn't really focus, maybe like it could. There are definitely some character moments in that issue that work really well, and that Hickman has also been building to for a long time since his Fantastic Four run. Because there's some Reed and Sue stuff in here that, you know, if you've been reading since that Fantastic Four run, is kind of a big deal. Like, it can hit you.
I am tied to Secret Wars. I am working on a Secret Wars project. I don't want to review this book because, you know, obviously I am compromised on this. I will say, though, purely as a reader, there's a page with the Punisher in this thing that is hilarious. That I, like, it's one of those that I read and I was absolutely delighted by it. that's all I will say. Also, I think it is Hickman on Twitter said that he was outvoted on calling this issue, like titling this issue, the perfect jumping off point, which I wish he would have, because that is, it's such a great title.
One last comic we want to talk about, and that's Bandette number 10. Chris, what do you think of that issue?
Well, and again, this is published by Monkey Brain, and you and I are both Monkey Brain creators, although I have not I have not produced my Monkey Brain comic in quite a while, because Eric is drawing Squirrel Girl, which is also out this week, which is very good. It's Bandette number 10. And it's the start of a new Bandette story, and I feel like this is not even a thing we need to tell anyone. But man, this book is good.
Yeah, Bandette is top notch.
And what's surprising to me is that Colleen Coover, who has been one of my favorite creators in comics since I first encountered her work. I mean, first of all, she somehow keeps getting better. Like, Bandette is somehow the best work she has ever done. It's so beautiful, and so just the art style of it is gorgeous. The expressions, the character designs. But what really struck me about this issue is that it is frequently laid out on a 9-panel grid, which means that you are getting so much comic in this. And it's full length. I believe this book is 99 cents on Comixology, and it's 20 pages. Like, it's at least, like, 18, I think, not counting, like, the inside front cover and the recap page. Like, there's so much. It is a dense chunk of comics, and it's beautifully done. Bandette's one of those things that I love and that I forget about, because there's time taken between arcs, much like Usagi Yojimbo. It's one of those ones where it's like, oh, yeah, it's great, of course. And then it's right in front of me, and I'm like, this is amazing. So Bandette number 10. If you have not read Bandette, you need to. I can't imagine people listening to this not reading Bandette, but you really do.
It's a buck. Go pick up the issue. And go get I have the hardcover. I think the second volume is, if it's not out, it's coming out very soon.
I believe the second volume is out.
Okay. I have the first volume from Dark Horse, and it is absolutely gorgeous. Picking up those hardcover collected editions is absolutely worth your time and effort. All right, Chris, we've got to move on to our interview segment now. So let's talk to our guest this week, who is Dave Willis.
Let's roll out. Joining joining us for the program this week is someone who's new to the show, but someone that I've known for a little while. We've had multiple meals together, occasionally on the same day. We've had dinner twice in a day once.
We had some harrowing car rides in San Diego.
We did. Oh, we did. Oh, God. I forgot you were there for that. David Willis is on the show. He is the creator of the ongoing webcomic, Dumbing of Age, the recently completed webcomic Short Pact, that people would not stop sending me, the strip about Batman in space. I got that emailed to me so many times. And he's also the guy who owns the Transformers Wiki. So, David, let's start with explain the Transformers to me.
Explain all the Transformers
yes.
to you?
Yes. We've got,
like, alphabetically?
What? We've got 45 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get through the ABs by then, but since it's like, explain Transformers in a nutshell, you mean?
I don't want to talk about Transformers the whole time, because you have your own... I mean, I do. I actually do. But
either way is fine by me, honestly.
I had lunch with Chad today, Chad Bowers, who's my writing partner, and he's a big Transformers guy. Yeah. And we were hanging out on Free Comic Day, too, and he is weirded out by me saying words like alt mode.
Wow.
And Tarn, like, and asking questions about Cybertron, because I have spent the last 32 years not liking the Transformers.
Well, I'm sure the live-action movies don't really help that along, so...
Yeah, when that's the only Transformers you see as an adult, they're very easy to hate.
Stuff from my kids, from my childhood, also made it kind of easy to hate, but... You know how pop culture franchises are. Sometimes you have something good, sometimes it's crap for decades.
I mean, I wouldn't know that. Everything I loved as a child is beautiful and perfect.
Yeah.
The Mask. Mask is great.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Their cars turn into vehicles, and then also dudes have masks that give them superpowers, so it's clearly the superior franchise.
If it's so great, where has it been since, like, the mid-1990s?
It's coming back, man. It's coming back in a big way.
Okay.
As soon as Matt and I get figure out the license. No, but, like, we are all people who really like things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I am a dude who is quite fond of Batman. You know, Matt loves Spider-Man, Matt loves Doctor Doom. Neither of us has thought to start a wiki.
Yeah. Well, where does that thought even come from? Of like, man, well, I got to get that wiki out there.
Here's how it happened. I was just like on the internet one day, as it happens, and there was a... wiki on the Transformers wiki on Wikia, the I guess the sort of Wikipedia affiliated sort of free wiki for making your own little small wikis, and it was really awful. There's just like a bunch of lists of characters, and that was the entire Transformers wiki. And so, as a joke, I created a strenuously an exhaustive page for a bit human character from the original Marvel comics, and that was it. And I thought that was hilarious, having this, you know, this. The vacant wasteland wiki, except for this one amazing article about a character nobody likes or cares about. It wasn't even a Transformer. And then I guess we made some more later. And then we left Wikia when it turns out Wikia was kind of weird about certain things. And we've exploded since then. I think we have like 20,000 articles now of Transformers and Transformers related stuff.
It's an interesting wiki, too, because of the way you've set it up. Because I've just been getting into the IDW stuff, which everybody was right. You were all right, and I was wrong. It is very good. Like, it is... I was telling Matt before we started recording, like, I can unreservedly recommend these comics. They're ridiculously good. And I was reading about Tailgate.
Yes.
And... because he's my favorite.
Oh, is he?
Tailgate and Rung. Those are my guys that I like. Poor Rung got shot in the face in the story I just read. But I was trying to figure out what Tailgate turns into, because in that first story he gets stuck halfway through transforming, and they're carrying him around, which is a great little visual. And so I went to the wiki, and I looked up Tailgate, and there's a disambiguation page. And it's, Tailgate is not to be confused with that guy who looks like Tailgate, and that other guy who looks like Tailgate. I'm like, who is this helpful for?
look, sometimes you go to the wiki and you put in something and you get the wrong thing and you want to find Cobra Commander, but instead you get, you know, Mark Twain, and you know that, you know how it is. But so
you have Cobra Commander in there because he's a old snake.
Yeah, anybody who has appeared like in conjunction with Transformers in an official like capacity. So there are pages for each of the like M&M characters, because there have been, you know, Revenge of the Fallen M&Ms or something like that.
Yeah, and Chester Cheetah is in there.
Oh yeah,
Chester Cheetah has an exhaustively detailed Transformers wiki entry.
Yes, he does.
Now, is that the kind of stuff? Is that the kind of stuff that Wikia was not into? Like, I don't know if you actually want me to pursue this or if I'm going down a rabbit hole.
Oh no,
but
that's fine. Well, our problem with Wikia was that they were putting like more and more obtrusive ads on their site, and they wanted us like change how we present our information, and basically they started putting ads on top of the content. And that really annoyed us, and so we just basically, you know, since it's a wiki, you can download the information and leave and put on a different wiki, so long as you, you know, link it back with all the Creative Commons stuff and everything. And that's why we split.
All right, well, here is the one question I've always had about Transformers, and this is the only one I'm going to ask, and then we can move on to the comics you have actually, you're all writing and drawing right now.
Is it about what Tailgate turns into?
No.
Because it's a Mustang, but
does he really? I mean, that makes.
I think it's a Mustang.
Shouldn't he turn into a truck? Yeah,
no, maybe it's a Firebird. I might be getting my guys mixed up, but like some sort of sport, like muscle car.
Muscle cars don't have tailgates.
Yeah,
like pickup trucks have tailgates.
Yeah, if he's a muscle car,
like, before football games.
If he's a muscle car, then his name should just be Trunk.
Spoiler. I, there's definitely one named Spoiler, right?
No, there isn't. I don't think so, though.
Okay, well, that's because DC got them lawyers.
Yeah, they're not likely to make one now.
Okay, so here's my question. The thing that, whenever I would tell people, like, no, I don't like the Transformers, invariably, people in Transformers would be like, not even Grimlock?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no, I don't like Grimlock, because Grimlock is a robotic Tyrannosaurus Rex that occasionally turns into a dude, and why would you do that? Why would you not just be a robot T-Rex all the time? So,
well, sometimes you want to be able to scratch your chin.
Yeah, robots don't have itches.
They don't?
I mean, I would like whoever designs a robot that can get itchy, it's pretty weird.
Well, sometimes Transformers like to say they are not robots. They're in fact just, you know, robotic alien beings, like mechanical alien beings, and not, you know, properly robots per se.
They're robots.
Well, I refer you to a certain theme song, my friend, that says that Transformers are in fact robots in disguise, and more than meets the eye.
Some individual Transformers are, you know, very specific with how they identify, and I think we should, you know, respect that.
All right, so that's the question I have about Transformers.
Okay,
Grimlock wants to scratch his chin. Okay, fine.
That wasn't really a question. That was Grimlock. Why? And that's okay.
I'm just saying, if I had the option to be a robotic Tyrannosaurus Rex, that is what I would be 24/7. There would be no transforming necessary.
He could have been the toaster.
I guess that's true. All right. So, David Willis, Dumbing of Age.
Yes.
This is your hardcore porn comic. That you do.
Yes, that is my hardcore porn comic.
Do I have this right that you occasionally do like some non-porn strips to set up the porn? Is that what you do?
Look, people read Dumbing of Age for the articles.
for all those banned comments.
Yes, yeah.
That's my question. What do you think gives you the right to ban people from your comments section?
From my own website. I don't know. I just feel like it. I'm a monster.
But one of the interesting things about Dumbing of Age, when I started reading it, because I joked around with you for a very long time about how I didn't read your comics, that I really enjoyed talking with you and hanging out with you at conventions, and then I would act completely surprised whenever anyone would bring up that you did comics. Because I'm a jerk. It's such a huge jerk move of me, so I apologize. But one of the things that I was really interested in was that Dumbing of Age is, I guess it's not a reboot. It's like a parallel continuity to something that you've been doing since, what, since high school?
Yeah, basically. These are a lot. Some of them are characters I've had since I was in elementary school.
Yeah,
the dudes, but
and the car, right?
Yeah, the car.
The car who is no longer a car. The car who is now just a woman who likes roller derby,
skates. Yes,
you know, I think a lot of people who are in comics, like, we all have that memory of sitting down when we're kids and sort of, you know, drawing comics and either, you know, fan comics. Sonic the Hedgehog OCs,
yes.
Or you know, comics about us and our friends. Like, I certainly did that when I was younger. Like, how did you just stick to that long up through? Because the end of Short Pack was the end of that, right?
That continuity, you mean?
Yes.
The universe. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't. I like inclusive universes. I like when things are connected. I like that things continue and, like, get to see tendrils from the past show up every once in a while. And that's sort of a author appeal, I guess, that shows up. And I also don't like letting things go, apparently, because even my reboot is basically the same characters in a different circumstance. And I just really like those people, and I like having things happen to them.
So when... I know the build to the end of Short Pact was something that you talked about a lot while you were doing it, but
yeah,
again, like, you know, despite your boyish good looks, you're 35, 34?
I am 36 as of last month.
Oh, happy birthday. So that's something if you've been doing this since elementary school, that's something you've been doing for 30 years.
Yes. Yeah. When I was a kid and I first started creating, like, you know, Ultra Car and the people who would fly him at the time around and shoot at aliens, I thought of this as like a future toy property, like G.I. Joe or Transformers or Mask. And I was like making this future masterpiece that would be about fighting aliens in a car that turns into things. And later I decided, you know what, I just like writing comic strips about these people, and that I'm satisfied with that.
What was it like to sort of finally come to the decision where you're like, okay, now I can be done with this?
I mean, once I created Dumbing of Age, I think Short Pack's writing was on the wall, and it just had to come to the point where I could live off the finances I was getting from only Dumbing of Age in order to, you know, switch the other one off. And at that point, it had been around for a decade when it finally ended. And I don't know. I think it's, even without Dumbing of Age, like the point of, I guess, the central story of Short Pack is that everyone's working at a toy store. And it gets really sad to have, like, the same, you know, 10 people working in a toy store for a decade as, you know, life progresses in real time and people become, you know, 40-year-olds working in a toy store. And, like, those poor guys, you know, they should... Some of them should find like better jobs, or, you know, become managers or move around or get promoted maybe, and that'd be nice. And you just kind of dwindle your castaway that way anyway. So I don't know. You just get to the, I don't know. I think most of all, when you have a continuity that's mired in yourself, you know, 17 years ago, that those earlier stories are not really who you are anymore. And so sometimes it's nice to break, like, you know, sort of snap off and start something fresh. So it's more rooted in who you are as a person at that point in time in your life.
So, of course, you decided to focus on the one about teenagers in college.
Yes. Well, I've never really progressed beyond that age mentally. So that works for me.
That's really interesting to me that you had them going that long. And then, yeah. And then you murdered them all, you monster.
Yes, they're all being digested right now, I'm sure.
Which, and that kind of brings us back around to Dumbing of Age. And so for anyone who's not familiar with it, Can you sum up what the deal is?
Dumbing of Age is a college strip, obviously, about a homeschooled girl who goes to, a school with people in it for the first time and learns a lot, makes some mistakes. There makes a best friend who's an atheist, and that shocks her for a while. But you know, she grows. She went to she went to a Christian homeschool because there are other kinds of homeschooling. They're not all religious based, but hers definitely was. And those are all based on my experiences as a child.
Yeah, and that's something that's really interesting because I see Faith Erin Hicks get this a lot, where when she came out with Friends with Boys, and she'll get reviews that talk about how insulting she is towards homeschool kids.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she has her main character interacting with people, and those people have questions about what it's like for the main character to have been homeschooled. And people are like, you know, this person obviously, you know, is so prejudiced against homeschool and knows nothing about it. And she was.
Yes. Yeah.
And you get this, like, I've seen you, you know, you I follow you on Tumblr, and look, not gonna lie, I do not read your comment section. I do not read comment sections in general. But you'll occasionally, you'll occasionally post comments that you get on Tumblr, and so I see them. And you also post these Transformers message board screenshots that I don't know why you do this to me specifically. Because they're awful.
Oh yeah.
You know, you constantly have people who are talking about how you're setting Joyce up as a straw man when she is the she's the author insert character. She's the one that is based on you.
She is a distillation of myself at that age. I was not. I guess the hugest difference between Joyce and I guess besides the obvious, you know, gender difference, is that she's a lot more outgoing than I am. I'm more antisocial, like Sarah is, and but Joyce, like the things she believes. The crazy thing she believes, that those all come from me when I was 18.
So do you mind talking a little bit about, like, your upbringing and how, because, again, that's something else that I've really wanted to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. You've been doing comics that entire time.
Yes.
Like, you've been doing comics through a major change in the stuff that you believe as a person.
Yes.
And that is something that has come through in your comics.
If you read my first webcomic, Roomies, which ran from like 1997 to 1999, you can, like, which I did for the Indiana University School newspaper when I was in college, you can, like, see, like, my worldview shift slowly, like, through the course of the comic, where at the beginning there's Joyce and she's complaining about premarital hanky-panky and everyone is like, oh no, sex and drugs and being an atheist, that's awful. And but by the end of it, like, people are sleeping in the same beds together, and it's like, yeah, that's the same person somehow, I don't know.
When did you decide to embrace Satan and all of his works?
Probably sometime in my early 20s.
Yeah, so do you mind, like, kind of going into the way that you were raised a little bit?
Sure. I was raised fundamentalist Christian. We moved from church to church a little bit before settling in a non-denominational church for probably, I'd say, about 10 years. And, we believed in the complete inerrancy of the Bible English version. I believe the earth was 6,000 years old. I believe the world is coming to an end soon, maybe in the year 2000 or 2006 or something like that. I thought all people who didn't believe exactly what I did were going to go to hell, whether that be, you know, Catholics or people who were Protestant but believed something slightly different. It's a big change from what I believe now, which is, whatever. I like pie. Let's eat some pie.
Yeah, you basically, like, if people go and read the first volume of Dumbing of Age, which is available, you have a store on your site. It's also available on Comixology, which is how I have it. Like, it's Joyce. It's everything Joyce believes. Dinosaurs were put there to test you.
Yes.
Which is weird, because Archie Goodwin says that the Transformers have been at war for 4 million years. So.
I know. Well, see, the thing when you when you're taught these things and you go to a public school, you just accept that, okay, this is what the school teaches. And so you learn those things nominally, but you don't, so you know, like you're familiar with them, and you, this is like how the outside secular world works and everything. And so, you know, I grew up really liking a franchise that is buried millions of years into our past, which, you know, to a young Earth creationist is something that couldn't have happened. But, you know, it's how you compartmentalize.
Yeah, and you've written a little bit about that, like in the strip and, you know, on Tumblr and just in the commentary for the strip. You've written a little bit about the media that you were and were not allowed to consume as a kid. And the rules, like the rules for what you were. And I remember, was it Power Rangers that you couldn't watch?
No, that was much too late. I was too old by then. Okay. I wouldn't have wanted to watch Power Rangers.
Well, look, it's great, and you should.
I'm sure it's every bit as good as the crap I watched when I was a kid.
Yeah, so what were some of the ones that you weren't allowed to watch?
I couldn't watch He-Man. Because only Jesus has the power. I know I should have ended with that one, but because that's really the best one. But I couldn't watch Disney's Gummy Bears because they used magic. Basically, magic was a big contributing factor into what I couldn't watch, which is part of why I was allowed to watch Transformers in the first place, because they're robots from space. Because even though, you know, all of modern biology and like archaeology is wrong, my mom really liked science and wanted me to be a person who is, you know, smart in science, because she wanted her kid to be smart, just, you know, not like the whole evolution kind of smart.
Yeah, just robots from space smart. That's a whole different kind.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I didn't watch an episode of The Simpsons until I went to college. I was barely allowed. I actually think watching Batman the Animated Series was one of the first times I disobeyed my parents on something, because that show was just so good, and my mom didn't like the darker Batman, and but that show was so good, so I would watch it if she wasn't home. It's this strong defiance of parental oversight.
Well, I mean, look. The thing about Jesus having the power might have actually just been, we're not watching He-Man because I cannot sit through He-Man, and it's terrible.
One of my favorite inconsistencies was I was allowed to watch Star Wars, even though I was constantly warned about quote-unquote Eastern religion. The reasoning was that Star Wars is a good movie, and I guess they grew up with Star Wars, I guess, in their college age years, and so that meant it was okay for me to watch it, since I guess they'd already vetted it.
I remember seeing this, like, form. It might have been in the back of a Chick tract I got last Halloween. Because, folks, that is the magical time in the South when you can find a Chick tract just out in the wild at Halloween. And I remember there was, like, a checklist in the back of things that say, you know, that you could have been participating in worshiping Satan and not even known it. And it had, like, you know, like, it literally had, like animal sacrifice on there. like you could be part of animal sacrifice and not go, hey, I don't think this is in the Bible. But one of them was yoga. And in parentheses, it said, religion, not exercise. So you can do yoga.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't, like, you can stretch. Stretching is fine.
Oh, yeah, have you seen the Christian yoga that's sprouted up around certain places? So you can do, you know, the good parts of yoga without, although, you know, the weird Eastern religion-y stuff all embedded in it.
Well, look, I'm not even gonna lie. My yoga is pro wrestling themed, so I really have no leg to stand on for that. Do you remember, like, in your comics career, like, over the course of the years that you were doing, you know, what is that? Is that the Walkieverse?
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, getting to a point, like, do you remember a strip that you did and something had changed? Like, that there was a specific moment? Or was it just that gradual, like, oh, no, I don't, I, I, think dinosaurs might have been real.
I don't know, there are certain, I guess, milestones that I passed along the way that I don't think it was like a switch or anything. I mean, partly into It's Walkie allowed my characters to swear for the first time. Like, I'd have, like, these, you know, I had this character who is a horn dog sort of sex maniac, probably, you know, if I had to be honest about it, probably atheist, probably some sort of heathen, but he never swore. He would say, gosh darn it, all the time, because that's just how I rolled back then. Or sometimes I would use, like, the little cartoon language sign stuff, but eventually, like, in a couple years in, I allowed them to say PG-rated stuff, or allowed them to sleep in the same bed, or I guess I had a character have an abortion, which... Even at the time, I was like, oh no, this is something weird. I'm not sure if I believe this is okay yet, but I think this is what the character would do. And I guess I just started putting myself into the mind of my characters. And through that, I started to grow empathy in different directions than I was, I guess, allowed to earlier.
So I guess that means that we know what the end point for Joyce is, eventually.
even in the Walkieverse, Joyce remained a Christian, even up until the very end. I'm not sure if I want to take her down exactly my road, but there are some things she's going to learn along the way.
Well, I mean, like, the interesting thing about reading it, especially with the storyline that you have going on now with Becky.
Yeah.
Like that Joyce finds out that her best friend is a lesbian.
Yeah.
Who has been kind of chased out of her chased out of her home and out of her college. And has to, like, there's the way that you present it is really great, because it's, you know, the strips are really funny, just in general. They all have nice little, you know, five panel punchlines. But the strip of Becky and Joyce having to kind of not even make a choice between what she believes and her friend, but because they're, you know, because Joyce is a character who I feel like it would be very easy to not like.
Yeah.
And you do, like, the best thing that you do in Dumbing of Age, I think, as a reader, and the thing that kind of got me hooked on reading it, once I found out you do comics, was that Joyce is... a really likable person. You know, her heart's in the right place, I think.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Because, you know, I think growing up in the South, like, Matt and I have probably had that experience too, where you meet people who are super nice, you just don't want them voting.
Yes.
It's like, you know, like, a friend of mine describes Hank Hill from King of the Hill like that. Like you would love to live next to him. Like, yeah. He'd love to live sort of as long as he wasn't voting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, the fact that she, you know, there's never really a moment where she has to decide if she's going to, you know, pick her friend or not. Because she, you know, of course she's going to pick her friend. Like,
yeah.
Obviously that is something that's important to her. But that she starts looking for loopholes immediately.
Yeah. She has to realign her worldview into something that still makes sense. She wants consistency, but sometimes that's hard to find.
Yeah, that's a thing that I think is really compelling, that you get to show that journey based on your experiences. You get to show that it's not like, you know, Joyce doesn't wake up one morning and throw the Bible through a window. Like we've seen in Left Behind. Both versions of Left Behind have a Bible getting thrown through a window.
In one of them, it was at a mirror.
Oh, that's right. One was a mirror. Apologies.
Well, never mind. I want to see it now.
Well, look, one time it gets thrown through a window. What if I told you that in both of these movies, there was a scene, there was a shot of a dog sitting next to an empty suit of clothes?
Okay, so a Bible gets thrown through a window, right?
Yeah.
Please tell me, like, on the other side of that window is, like, Bruce Wayne sitting there wondering who he should become.
And that becomes
is the origin of Bible Man, legitimately existing Christian entertainment superhero.
I think instead of Bruce Wayne, you're talking about that guy from Charles in Charge who actually became Bible Man.
Willie Ames.
Willie Ames, yeah, that's his
Bible
name.
Man.
I couldn't remember the actor's name. Willie Ames.
He had the armor of faith, the shield of righteousness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, it is a very gradual process. And again, it's always really surprising for me. You'll see comments of people who are so mad at you for how you treat Joyce. Because, well, even apart from her being the kind of autobiographical character in everything, is, you know, you're like, yes, she's wrong about certain things. But yes. Also, she's, of everyone in the cast, like, there's a likable bunch of people. But, you know, the kind of most purely likable and friendly character is Joyce. Like, she is, like, she believes some dodgy things. At the end of the day, like, yeah, she is a really positive character. And that's a portrayal that you don't see a lot. Like, and I get why that portrayal might get the reaction that it does, because I feel like there's, you often get characters, especially like Christian characters, at extremes, right?
Yeah.
You either get, you know, you either get your Left Behinds, your Rayford Steeles, who are like, no, this is all right, and I am a strapping heroic man who will save the day. Or you get, you know, the comic that is about how dumb people who have religious beliefs are.
Or you get Ned Flanders, who is kind of like a more sympathetic portrayal of a Christian when you scratch the surface than you might think, but he's still Ned Flanders. He's still a parody character.
Yes.
He's why I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons.
Really? I would have assumed it was because my mom objected to the very imitatable phrase, eat my shorts.
Eating shorts disallowed in your household?
I mean, look, that it was such a, like, it was the real life version of the one where Bart has the t-shirt that says down with homework that scandalizes everybody.
I had members of my family who were very upset by the episode where Homer decides to stop going to church. Despite the message of that episode at the end being like, people, like, Homer's a jerk. And religious
that
people,
episode, like, God is 100% real in that episode.
And he comes and talks to Homer in a real conversation.
Yeah.
Well, that's just blasphemy.
And also that you and I have had the, you and I, Matt, have had the conversation about how The Simpsons was so weirdly, like, targeted as this demonic force for evil in the world. And they're the only TV family that goes to church.
Yeah. George Bush gave a speech about The Simpsons when he was had just become president or was campaigning for president. That was very, very popular.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's an interesting thing about Dumbing of Age, that she is, and for her to be an autobiographical character, it's, I think as creators, it's so easy to, you know, put bits and pieces of ourselves into our work and, like, be very dismissive of, you know, things we used to believe, things we used to do. Because we're like, I'm glad I'm not, you know, I'm glad I don't think that way anymore. Yeah. But yeah, you're very kind to her in a way that, as a creator, in a way that I really enjoy as a reader.
I just really felt I had to. I mean, I was making her the main character of my strip, and she couldn't be like the, you know, worst person in the world and no one read it. I had to find some good in her, make sure she's engaging and a good person in general, even despite her believing some toxic things, and just gotta have to find a balance between the crazy stuff she believes and the way she treats other people.
Yeah, and there's a really good discussion that I think people should check out that happens in the strip, and it happens in the commentary. And you have a very dedicated audience. Like, every strip post has like 200 comments.
Oh yeah, they're great. Usually.
And there's, you know, I've seen, again, the bits and pieces that you posted on Tumblr about the idea of loving the sinner and hating the sin, and how how opposed to that idea you are because of how marginalizing it is and how condescending it is.
It's awful. It's like trotted out as this like, no, look, I'm still a good person because I'm somehow compartmentalizing this, but you're still saying some crappy stuff. It's not really making it just sort of like just using words to say the same thing. It's not any better.
I mean, I think that's a, you know, I think that's a phrase that has its uses. Like, I think that's a phrase that can be applied to situations.
Yeah.
But like that it's so often applied to sexuality.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like, oh no, the person you are is wrong.
it shouldn't be used as a like get out of bigotry free card or anything. Yeah.
So I would definitely suggest everybody go check that stuff out. You know, give your Tumblr a follow if you want to see the worst comments from people named like G1 Megatron. I'm sorry, I'm sure G1 Megatron is a nice guy. I just can't remember anyone's name.
I think that guy is fairly okay.
Matt, if people would like to get in on asking us questions over Twitter each and every week when we do these little interviews, how can they go about that?
Well, what they need to do is they need to start a wiki, a War Rocket Ajax wiki, documenting every one of these Twitter question intros that I've ever done. Because, frankly, I don't remember any of them. I do them, and then I forget them. This might be the most meta of these that I've ever done, and I feel like that's appropriate. 9:30 p.m. on Thursday night, Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. We will put out the call for questions on Twitter for our guest. And at that time, you can ask questions of our guest. Like these questions, you're about to hear from Dave Willis. For Dave Willis. Don't put this one on the wiki. I don't think I did a great job on this one.
Somebody really needs to go start up Wiki Rocket Ajax right now.
All right, the first question we have is from Firehawk32 on Twitter, Philip Lopez. His question is, Dave Willis, why do you delight in hurting me so much with your fictional characters?
I'm just a broken person, and I lash out so people hurt me back, and I feel like I've, you know, vindicated the feelings I have toward myself.
That's spiraling, Dave. You should really get above and beyond that. Greg Black.
Look, David Willis also once told me that he eats Taco Bell for every meal, so there is definitely a shame cycle involved.
Look, I try not to eat there every single day, all right? I do my best.
How many days a week, Dave?
Actually, I haven't been. If I have to be like real and not cartoon version of myself, I actually don't go there that often anymore.
What do you think?
Maybe biscuit, once a week at the most.
Biscuit taco or waffle taco?
I get up early enough for that.
All right, because let me tell you, the biscuit taco is a poor replacement for the waffle taco.
So I prefer I like the smothered burrito minus the sour cream, because sour cream is gross. But
I agree.
Yeah, the beef smothered burrito is great.
All right, Tales to Enrage, Greg Black asks, which Transformer would have the best Michael Caine impression?
Well, in the cartoon Transformers Prime, Soundwave spoke by playing back recordings of other people, so I would say him.
That's not an impression.
Fine.
You just got Matt Wilson. You just got that quick turn to anger.
Fine, Wreck-Gar. He repeats TV stuff in his own voice.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's like Eric Idle, so he's got like that English accent going already anyway.
Mike Pankowski says, this is more of a challenge than a question, I think.
Oh, dear.
When will you accept the fact that G.I. Joe is better than Transformers?
I would like to know that as well.
I guess maybe when they make some G.I. Joe product this year.
How dare you? How dare you?
John Troutman, the only Trout on Twitter, doesn't have a question at all. This is a one...
Did he say butts?
He said butts. So, take that as you will. Danicus Rex on Twitter wants to know if we can have another contest to see who has the best transforming noise impression. Now, Chris and I did this a while back where we tried to do the best transformer noise. I don't think we ever actually got any kind of determination as to who had the best one.
Well, look, if anybody's going to judge it, it should be David Willis.
Well, I think Dave should do his own.
Man, I haven't actually made that noise myself since I've been five. I don't know.
I do not believe that.
Well,
I do not believe that to be true at all.
We're all going to do it right now. Okay?
Like at the same time?
No. We're going to start with you. Do your transforming noise, Dave.
All right.
All right.
How's that?
All right, Chris.
All right, here's my Transformers noise. It's a little faster than that one.
That sucked.
All right.
Like, I never watched the show. What do you want from me?
Mine is more like.
That sounds like more of a Beast Wars-y kind of transformation noise.
Listen, mine's a little more digital, okay? I'm in the modern age, guys. All right, the Noir guy on Twitter has this question. Will Soggies rule?
They may.
All right, leaving it up in the air. Leaving they some may. Gray area. Michael Dunphy, Super Giraffe, on Twitter, has one that is infuriating. Would a robot that turns into a hot dog count as a sandwich?
What? I don't think I understand that one.
I think we need to start taking votes, all right?
Is there some like bread involved that would make it a sandwich? What makes it a sandwich?
David Willis, let me just ask you a question, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you can only answer yes or no. There is no qualifier. It is a yes or no question. Do you believe that a hot dog is a sandwich?
No.
Okay. So we'll mark David Willis down as a no.
Yeah. We're marking him down in the book of sandwich. All right. This is another one from the Noir guy. Now that Chris is a hardcore Transformers fan, what toys does he need to buy? What toys does he need to buy?
Like my recommendation, or?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, if you like Tailgate so much, his toy exists. Rungs doesn't, because he turns into a stick. And, but yeah, I would.
Spoilers. You can probably,
I don't. Nobody actually knows what he turns into still, so it's a good estimation. But yeah, you can find a Tailgate toy probably pretty easily online. He's off pegs right now, but he's out there if you want to find him on the secondary market.
Should I get this this Generations Legends class Autobot Tailgate and Groundbuster? Who's Groundbuster?
That is a little helper guy that they packed along with him for reasons not having to do whatsoever with the comic you like.
Okay.
He is just bonus.
You bringing up the secondary market sounds like there's a real black market for Transformers toys that
not that I'm aware of. That's just fancy words for eBay.
Yeah, I know, but I want to believe that there are people meeting in back alleys with trench coats full of Transformers toys. Sam Mickens.
Happens a little bit at BotCon sometimes when they disallow the unlicensed Transformer knockoff stuff, and so they have to do it in the hallways of the hotel.
Wait, are you talking about like Beyond GoBots?
There's a actual market for people to make knockoff toys of Grimlock and whatnot from engineered themselves, produce them, and sell fully transforming toys that are.
So you're not talking about like dollar store Transformers toys. All right.
No.
Like the dollar store G.I. Joes that were like America Man.
No.
Sam Mickens. Like
collector item stuff.
Okay.
That is unofficial.
If you look up Tailgate Transformers on Amazon, down at the bottom of the first page of results is the Dwayne Johnson handbook, everything you need to know about Dwayne Johnson, which I would like to know how that algorithm works. The second thing is that I like these comics so much that the other day I was in Walmart getting groceries and I swear I almost bought an Optimus Prime. Optimus Prime's not even in those comics.
No, I was going to say, what the hell, man?
This is a question from Sam Mickens. He wants to know, if you had to cast a contemporary live-action Transformers film, who would you have as Optimus, Megatron, and Starscream?
I'm guessing voices, or...?
Unless you're putting people in robot costumes, yeah.
I was wondering, I mean, that could be a possibility. I don't know, my voices for Optimuses and Megatrons are influenced pretty strongly by Beast Wars. So I have to go with, like, Gary Chalk and David Kaye. And for Starscream, I guess Tom Kenny was pretty good as him in Animated, so him.
I like Tom Kenny. That's a good choice. Last question. Charlotte of Oz. Chris started liking Transformers, and now it's your turn to like something he likes. What do you pick?
Not wrestling. Is there like some like weird Batman villain you have like a strange obsession with?
Yeah, there is.
I mean, everyone that's not the Hush.
Well,
the Hush. First of all, let's all start calling Hush the Hush. That will make him a million times better.
That's a version of the Hush. That's a version of Hush from the Batman. You know, the old cartoon.
Look, you can't pick one character. It's got to be a whole thing, because Transformers is a whole thing. So it's got to be
like all of Power Rangers.
It's got to be Power Rangers, wrestling, Sailor Moon, Tokusatsu, maybe specifically Kamen Rider. Batman, but I don't think that really counts.
You already like Batman.
I guess I'd probably go with Sailor Moon.
Okay.
You know what? Good choice.
Sailor Moon it is. Our guest has been Dave Willis, everybody. Dave, before we let you go, please tell everybody where they can find you on the internet.
I'm at dumbingofage.com.
And what about on Twitter? How can they follow you on Twitter?
Oh, I'm at Damn You Willis.
A Twitter name you would not have allowed yourself to have those many years ago.
Does anyone...
I would have been Darn.
Yeah, does anyone have Darn You Willis that just retweets everything?
I think Darn You Willis... Sanity? The Darn You Willis Twitter account should be an account for some kind of service that knits like little knit creations of your characters.
And then burns them in effigy?
I would say like gives them to people or sells them for that profit and gain.
I lost my interest.
Dave Willis has been our guest, everybody. Dave, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks once again to David Willis for joining us. Just for the record, I did add Tailgate to my Amazon wish list, so that's happening now. Oh, brother. And that has raised so many questions about what I'm doing with my life, but maybe we can answer some other questions.
That's right. Questions from our listeners that are submitted to our Tumblr, warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Now, you might be asking, Matt, I thought you would be doing some quotes lists this week. Because you did a quote last, or you did a question last week. Well, that's true. But stay tuned next week, and you might find out why we decided to not do quotes this week. That's all I'll tell you. And I've got a question here from an anonymous questioner on Tumblr. A friend of mine actually just finished reading the first volume of Runaways and loved it. I was wondering if you guys could recommend some good books for them to read, because there's somebody who has never read any other comics. So somebody who has just read one Runaways, they really liked it. They want some other things to read.
Well, I would say, I mean, first of all, Runaways is one of the most perfect gateway comics, I think.
Yes, it's actually the first comic I ever got my wife to read. And she loved it. And so what I did with her is pass her along some other Brian K. Vaughan books. I got her to read Why the Last Man next, which she dug and read every issue of pretty quickly. I think that was the only Brian K. Vaughan book I gave her after that. She's very interested in Saga, which I'm probably going to get her at least the first trade paperback of sometime in the near future. Chris, what are some other post-Runaways books that you think would be good?
I mean, I would say probably after Runaways, the best thing to give to a new reader would probably be Downset Fight and Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective.
Yeah, those are good ones.
And you're going to want to get multiple copies of each of those.
Oh, yeah.
You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. One of the, you know, you went straight for more Brian K. Vaughan. I was thinking more Adrian Alfona. And I was thinking that Ms. Marvel would be a pretty easy link to get through.
Ms. Marvel is a good one, for sure.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of good stuff out there that... Young Avengers is another one. The Gillen and McKelvey Young Avengers, particularly, I would say. Because it has that same kind of teen hero stuff. And again, you know, Adrian Alfona and Christina Strain colored it, I think. That art is so good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And so moving to something like, you know, McKelvey's work on Young Avengers, I think is really good. And the great thing about both of those books is that Runaways is a great gateway comic, but it's also weirdly and interestingly tied to the larger Marvel universe. Like it's a book that's great for new readers that also doesn't shy away from continuity. And I think in a lot of ways, with superhero comics, continuity is what hooks you, right? Like we see it in the movies.
It's either what hooks you or it's what drives you away.
Yeah, but I do think it's what hooks people. Like people want to see Robert Downey Jr. show up in a Captain America movie, right? They want to see, you know, Black Widow show up in those and then move into her own movie. Getting the bits and pieces in Runaways, like, you know, mutants, Skrulls, Wolverine shows up in that comic.
Yeah. I mean, the very first thing that happens in Runaways is an Avengers joke.
playing the MMORPG.
Yeah.
Also, really easy to get into Marvel Puzzle Quest Runaways. Yeah, but I think there's if that is the kind of, you know, young hero adventure that someone who reads Runaways enjoyed about it, like if that's the thing that you enjoy about it, now is a really great time. Because yeah, you know, I mean, you can obviously go back and get Young Avengers, but you can go to Batgirl, you can go to Gotham Academy. And all those books have really, you know, they're really top-notch in that they have that beautiful art to go along with it. Like, Carl Kerschel is killing it on Gotham Academy.
You could go to, as we mentioned, Ms. Marvel, or Squirrel Girl, or Silk, or Spider-Gwen, even though Spider-Gwen's kind of a weird side-universe thing.
I feel like Spider-Gwen or the new arc on Spider-Woman would be a good place to go.
Sure.
Squirrel Girl, yeah, like definitely that's one to get. Again, because Runaways is frequently very funny. And Squirrel Girl has turned out to be very funny as well. And then, you know, once you like Squirrel Girl, you know, if you like Squirrel Girl, I say once like it's a foregone conclusion because I can't imagine people not liking that comic. But, you know, then go read some of Ryan North's Adventure Time comics and go read Midas Flesh. I mean, you know, I would say if you like Runaways, Midas Flesh is a completely different comic, but you're probably going to like it. You know, like there's a lot of good stuff to go with. Runaways is a great book, and it's really easy to branch out from it because there's so much stuff.
Yeah, and then there's the non-Marvel, non-DC stuff. You know, the stuff we talk about all the time on this show and how much we like it. Lumberjanes.
Oh, yeah, Lumberjanes is great.
Rocket Girl.
Oh, Rocket Girl was good. There's a new Rocket Girl arc this week, I think, starts. Bendette.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of options, and I think there's now more than any time in recent comics history, there are so many points from not that long ago where you can pick up a series, and it's super accessible, and you can get right into it.
People are going to look back on Runaways the same way that people look back on a thing like Buffy, I think. Where you're going to see, like, Runaways is going to be this entry point for so much stuff.
Yeah.
Jim and the Holograms. Two issues of that are out. If you like Runaways, you're probably going to like that comic.
Yeah, it's good. That is our listener question. We really appreciate that one, and it was a good one. It got us to talk about some good comics.
Yeah, and again, if you know someone who is curious about getting into comics and doesn't mind kind of reading something that's a couple years old, Runaways is a pretty great gateway. I've known a lot of people in my time who came in through Runaways. So,
and if those people happen to be into manga but not American comics, Runaways is there's an edition in a digest that you can give somebody. Real easy to just gift it off. All right, that's our listener question. We appreciate it a lot. Now, we're going to tell you again where you can ask us questions. You can go to warrocketpodcast@.tumblr.com, not at dot, and leave a question for us there. You can also send us questions at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send us every story ever lists, word heavyweight champion lists. You can send us comments or questions or whatever else you want to there. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, and leave comments. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that's where you'll find the show. Leave us a review if you like the show. The more good reviews we get, the more listeners we get, the more we're featured as well. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. And you will find links to all of my stuff. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. Also, keep an eye on Comixology, X-Men 92 number 1, co-written by me and Chad Bowers with art by Scott Kalbush and covers by Pippi Larraz, will be coming out later this month. And we're very excited about that. If you have a suggestion for what our next Patreon goal should be, please email us. Drop us a line on the Tumblr. It has been suggested that Matt and I do commentary for classic wrestling matches. And I think that might be our next one, our next goal. But we will see. If you have any more suggestions, we would love to hear them. And if you do want to give back to the show a little bit, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Again, it is not necessary. We are going to keep doing the show. We definitely appreciate everyone who has helped us out through Patreon to keep going. We genuinely appreciate it. But if you are just a listener who enjoys the show, we also appreciate you. That does it for episode 253. We'll be back next week with a special episode. I wonder what it could be. I wonder what might happen over the course of that episode.
You'll have to just wait and see. Certainly we didn't record it 2 weeks in advance and already know.
Yeah, of course not. We would never record, so we would never have already recorded our next episode out of sequence.
Well, this has been War Rocket Ajax number 253.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah! Flash. Hey, Flash! From this day on,